at Health and Natural Medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 4th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is out teaching a class. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, more interesting health stuff. Tooth out on Wednesday, this past Wednesday. Very interesting. I had 16 teeth until then, and now I only have 15. They said it had to come out because I had external root resorption. And external root resorption is very interesting because everybody, the endodontist, the maxillofacial surgeon, and my regular dentist all said external root resorption is a mystery. What happens is your body, for whatever reason, decides that it has to resorb part of the root of your tooth. And they don't know exactly why it happens. And it may be because of trauma. And it could be trauma from a long time ago. It's not really a hygiene thing. It's just something that happens. And they said, the root resorption comes out, that part of the tooth is unprotected and it can cause decay. And it can cause a chain reaction of decay in the other teeth around it. So it had to come out. So it's out now, and I'm assuming I'm going to get a permanent bridge. I'm not going to go the way of implants because Dr. Shfarik said there was some concern about the bone in that region. So I am going to get a bridge, and because I'm getting crowns, I'm assuming that it's going to be a permanent bridge as opposed to a temporary bridge. I didn't realize that bridges can be permanent or temporary. So I guess I'll find out on Wednesday coming what I'm going to get. So I'm having that done. Very exciting. The interesting thing about having a tooth extraction, it wasn't extremely painful. It's a little bit sore, but it wasn't sore enough for me to want to take medicine. The maxillofacial surgeon was delightful. She was actually really interesting. She was a Quebecois woman. And when she came in with this very bright personality and this very heavy French accent, I said, oh my goodness, are you from France or are you Quebecois? And she was impressed that I said Quebecois and not from Quebec or from Quebec. So we talked about how I was from Canada, and I explained to her that I had lived in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and gotten my citizenship. And so we had a nice talk about that. And she was concerned that I would be bored living here after having lived in Portland, Oregon. I said, no, I love it here. It's really great. So she was really cute. She did a really great job of extracting the tooth. It really didn't take very long. It was only one tooth. Came out all in one piece, thank goodness. And then she showed me the tooth. She asked me if I wanted to see the tooth. And I said, absolutely. I wish I had kept it or at least taken a picture of it so I could have it to show. But I wasn't thinking straight, so I didn't do that. And after you have a tooth extraction, those of you who have had it done, you know, they give you gauze and they put it in your mouth and you have to leave the gauze in place until your bleeding stops. And so I had the gauze in for maybe 2 hours total. And I went straight to the local smoothie joint. And at the smoothie joint, the young woman who worked there, knew exactly what to do. She said, no straw for you. You can't have straws because you can't suck in anything quickly and you can't rinse your mouth aggressively because there's a clot that needs to stay in place. And if you don't allow the clot to stay in place, you can get something awful called dry socket. And dry socket is where there's bone exposure. You have extreme pain and you have infection. So far, so good. Again, I don't have extreme pain. I do have a little bit of soreness. I have soreness, mild soreness at the tooth site and the surrounding nerves. And I also have soreness where she injected me. So I have some irritation on the cheek side, not so much on the gum on top, but on the cheek side. So I think that's from the injection. But otherwise, I'm not in extreme pain. I notice that lying down, when I get up in the morning, it's a little more sore. Because overnight I have not been able to drink because I have been sleeping. I mean, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I do take sips of water, but you know, if I'm sleeping, I can't drink. And then you're lying down, so inflammation tends to accrue. And then once you're upright and moving around, it tends to settle down. So right now I feel pretty good. So it's been a few days now. And, you know, you have to eat soft foods. They said any calories today don't count. Go get ice cream. Go get pudding. So I did those things. I couldn't find vegan pudding at the grocery store. So I had to order some. And I did get some. I found some oat milk-based pudding that was prepared because I didn't feel like making it. And I'm sure there's an easy way to make vegan pudding. But I don't do well with dairy, so I wanted to have non-dairy pudding, and that is totally a thing. Ron went to the co-op to get us some soup, and we found some soup for me to eat. And when you eat hot things, you can't eat super spicy stuff, and you can't eat super hot stuff. So if you're going to eat soup, it has to be tepid, room temperature, not too hot. And I had tea as well. And oops, I had a couple days of tea where I put hot honey in it. And you're not supposed to have cayenne. So oops. I thought the cayenne would be good because it's a styptic and helps you to clot. But they said, no, it's too spicy, can dislodge the clot. But honey is fine. I thought the honey and the green tea together, one would be a great antioxidant and antimicrobial. And well, honey is also a great antimicrobial. So I should have had plain honey. So I'm going to stick with plain honey and not too spicy in the next little while. Of course, it's better and better because it's been a few days. So let me see. So today is this date and it's been 4 days. So I am very aware of the space in my mouth and I'm looking forward to getting the bridge so that I don't feel the space, but I'm going to get prepped this coming Wednesday. And so I'm probably not going to have the bridge for a week or two after that. So that'll be interesting. Getting older is no fun. And the thing is, this whole process of root canals and extraction and bridge has taken so long that it's almost time for my 6-month prophylaxis again. And I'm so afraid they're going to find something else that I have to get taken care of because I have not been having good luck lately with teeth, even though I brush, I floss, I pick, I water floss. And I can't water floss right now. They said not to do that because that can dislodge the clot. But I can do salt water rinses. So I'm doing them as often as I think of them. I'm not in a lot of pain, so I forget to do it. But I'm going to stay home today and not do very much. So I'm going to make sure to do salt water rinses frequently. And you're totally supposed to do salt water rinses right after you eat. And they are soothing, I must say. They're soothing both for the socket and as well as the irritated gums and cheek where the injections went in. So those are nice. And I'm doing it with Himalayan salt because I don't know if we have regular sea salt in the house. So when you do Himalayan salt, when you try to dissolve salt, Himalayan salt in water, it doesn't all dissolve. Some of it it has a harder time dissolving in the water, which is fine. But a lot of it does, you know, because there's plain salt in there as well. But you have this pink residue at the bottom. So anyway, so I was thrilled that it was not nearly as traumatic as I thought it was going to be. And I hope I don't have to have that happen again, but who knows, you know, it's like that. I just have not been having good luck with tooth stuff lately. So let's hope that this is it for a while, that I'll get this bridge and then I'll manage to keep the decay at bay. And I'll be set for a while. So that'll be nice. So that's happening. And then this Wednesday also, after I get the crown prep, I'm going to go back to New Britain and get my other iridotomy done. So the iridotomy went great. So I had the narrow angles. And the narrow angles are fixed by having an iridotomy. So you have another place for aqueous humor to drain. So you're not, you're much less likely to get that acute narrow angle glaucoma, angle closure glaucoma. So, and vision loss. So far so good. I'm happy because I only have a couple of days before the second iridotomy. And then I don't have to worry about that anymore because then I can get dilated. I can, it's okay to do cannabis. It's okay to, your eyes can safely dilate. And that's as of this coming Wednesday, that's not going to be a problem anymore. I'll have to do another week of eye drops. I did 1 week of eye drops and I stopped the eye drops after a week, as he told me to. And my right eye's fine. It's as if it never happened. It's totally fine. So he's going to check it, make sure it's okay. And if it's okay, he's going to do the other eye because I can see out of the right eye just fine. And everything's good. I think it was a little bit blurrier for a little bit and it may still be healing. It does seem like I have more acuity in the left eye than I do in the right. And I think that was true anyway. So So I'm looking forward to that. And then a week from Monday, I have my MRI of my back. And so we're going to find out if I still have stenosis or if there's something to be concerned about and what the recommendations for whatever they see in there is. So it's a lot to do. And I am looking forward to having a good rest today after I make the show and get on the bike for a little bit and just focusing on self-care and rest for the next little while. Wednesday is going to be a big day because I have both dentist and eye. And then for a while, I won't have anything because if, God forbid, I have to have more surgery, we're going to kick that out for a little while. I'm not going to have it right away. Anyway, so that's the exciting thing. And as I'm talking to my older patients, and by older, I mean anybody who's in their 50s or 60s or beyond, getting older is not for the birds. There's a lot going on. So in terms of my spinal stenosis and nerve pain, I'm going to try everything conservatively that I can. I'm taking a lot of supplements for it. Among them, I'm taking benfotiamine, which is enhanced vitamin B1. And so by enhanced, I mean it metabolically more bioavailable. So I'm taking that, and I'm taking fish oil and curcumin. I'm taking lion's mane, and I take lion's mane in a powder, so I have a little teaspoon that goes into my protein shake every day, so it makes it really easier. And when you get powders for things, they tend to be less expensive, so per unit volume. And so if you manage the way it tastes, and lion's mane, it's a tiny little bit, and it's hidden in the smoothie. I can't taste it at all. Not that I know what it even tastes like. I mean, I should probably taste a little bit and see what it tastes like. It's just a mushroom. And the other thing about powders is that you can take more of them at a better cost. And the thing about powders is too, if you have a capsule, they often have to put tableting agents or agents to make it not clump up. And when you have powders, often the only thing that's in the powder is what you're getting. So the lion's mane is just lion's mane powder. There's no magnesium stearate. There's no silicone. There's nothing to keep it in the capsule. And there's no capsule. So that's a nice thing. I was talking to my friend the other day, and she was asking me if she ought to take creatinine. And creatinine is now a big deal. And creatinine is something that can help with muscle building, with energy. It's something that as you age, it can be helpful for you. And it's particularly good to help you with muscle building if you are working out. So we looked it up, and my friend is small, so she's not going to need to take the full 5-gram dose that they recommend before working out. And we looked at what the most cost-effective way to do it, and she was interested in taking a gummy. And you have heard me say this before. Gummies are fun to take. They taste good, and they make it so people are interested in taking their supplements. But be prepared to pay for them, because you can't fit a lot of the stuff into a gummy. So per unit volume, gummies are not cost-effective. Often gummies come with sugar in them. You can also get gummies that don't have sugar in them and that, you know, have some kind of a sugar alcohol or other type of sweetener in them. And so generally gummies are fun because they taste good and they're motivating. They make you want to take the supplement. And I admit that I do take some gummies. The other thing about gummies you have to be careful of, if they have sugar in them, you want to drink lots of water right after that or even brush your teeth a little bit. To get the gummy residue off because they're not good for your teeth. So what I do is, you know, I take my gummies with tea, and then I have plain water and a bunch of plain water right afterwards to dilute them, and then make sure to brush my teeth that evening. So, and then do the remineralization. If you're going to get creatinine, the most cost-effective way to do it so that you can get the right dose is really to get the powder. And if you get the powder, because we were looking at the powder, the ingredients of capsules, powders, and gummies, and when you buy creatinine powder, the ingredient in the creatinine powder is creatinine. The ingredient in a capsule is creatinine, possibly magnesium stearate, possibly silicone, possibly something else, microcrystalline cellulose in the capsule. And so you have other ingredients. And the other ingredients might be benign, but there's other ingredients that you're paying for. And when you have to take capsules, they can only make a capsule so big or you won't be able to swallow it. And so you have to take a lot of capsules, and it's not as cost effective. So creatinine is something you have to take a lot of. So the recommended dose for most people is 5 grams at a time before a workout, and depending on your size. And my friend is small, so she's close to 100 pounds, so she probably only needs 2,500 to 3,000 milligrams. And so I recommended, you know, get the powder and put it in something, you know, put it in a food or beverage. She was like, what does it taste like? I said, I don't know. But, you know, stuff like that, unless it's very, very obnoxious, you're probably not going to taste it. And we looked it up, and creatinine doesn't have much of a taste. So if she puts it in a smoothie or an applesauce or tea, she's probably not going to taste it. I put collagen and I put a nitric oxide enhancer that's mostly amino acids into my tea. And, well, they put fruit flavoring in it, so it's fine. So anyway, but when I was using collagen that was unflavored, and I wasn't doing the nitric oxide enhancer that has fruit flavoring in it, I was putting that in unflavored, and it just tasted like the tea. It really didn't make a difference. So be aware of that when you are able to use powders for something that you have to take a pretty big dose of, then it's more cost effective to get the powder. So when you have an option like that, and gummies, like I said, gummies have tooth issues, and they often don't. You can't get the dose that you need in just one gummy, and they're expensive per unit volume. So anyway, so that's what's going on with that, I think. And so I'm going to get that MRI of my back, and we're going to find out what to do, what the next steps are in terms of my back. And in the meantime, I'm trying to line up everything I can so I don't have to have more surgery. So that's going to be acupuncture, cranial sacral therapy, good quality physical therapy, chiropractic, exercises. I have some devices for electrotherapy. So we're going to try a bunch of things. And I just, you know, hopefully, because the thing with surgery takes you out of your game and you have to recover from the surgery. And surgery is no guarantee, as we know, because I still have femoral neuralgia, unfortunately, and I don't want to damage the nerve anymore. I'd like it to heal. And I'd also, it is possible that I just still have femoral neuralgia because the nerve is taking its time healing and I just need more time. And if that's the case, I'll be very happy. I mean, I'm not thrilled because I still have the discomfort, but I'm not, I don't have so much discomfort that I can't function. When I was very flared, I couldn't sit. When I sat, that aggravated the femoral neuralgia. That doesn't happen anymore. Sitting, I mean, I feel heavier and some discomfort, but I wasn't able to even sit on the toilet. It was so painful. And that has not happened since the surgery. That's why I'm wondering if the discomfort I'm having is mostly nerve irritation and it's not that the stenosis has reasserted itself. So let's hope. All right. So we were talking about respiratory infections the last time I spoke with you, and I didn't get a chance to talk about coughs. I was talking mostly about upper respiratory infections. So now we want to talk about lower respiratory infections. Okay. So here's the deal. Coughs and bronchitis. So I have some favorite herbs for coughs and bronchitis. And you know, there's respiratory infections that start as upper respiratory infections and they turn into bronchitis, especially if you're prone or you have some scarring in your lungs because you've had repeat bronchitis in the past. And you can also, there's RSV out there, respiratory syncytial virus, which you can get and gives you quite the cough. And of course you can catch COVID, and COVID can also give you a cough. And if bronchitis gets out of hand, it can turn into pneumonia, which is inflammation of your lung tissue. So, and depending on how severe your pneumonia is, it may require hospitalization. And if you can't breathe, if you're coughing and you can't breathe, either go to the urgent care or go to the hospital, go to the ER and get taken care of, because you don't want to have a situation where you can't breathe and, you know, you have respiratory failure. And I have had to go in years past, I've had severe enough bronchitis that I've had to go to urgent care and they give me, a nebulizer, and the nebulizer usually has albuterol and an antimuscarinic, which is usually, I think, triopium, something like that. And it's a muscarinic antagonist, so that it calms down secretions and it makes it so you can breathe. And then the albuterol just is a bronchodilator and opens up your lungs so that you can breathe. And boy, when I've had the bad bronchitis, as soon as they put the nebulizer on, it's great because you stop coughing. I've had bronchitis so bad that every time I would breathe, I would cough. And I haven't gotten that since the last one, which was in 2020. And thank goodness, knock on wood. And I'm so very grateful for that. And since then, I have taken small amounts of lung herbs every day. So I have lung concoctions that I get from my suppliers, and they have wonderful herbs in them. So, and I do a lot of ginger. I have ginger powder. Ginger powder goes into my smoothie every day. And I will eat candied ginger sometimes, but most of the time I have. And if you have a coughing fit and you want to quickly get ginger on board, you can keep candied ginger around. That's really great too if you have a little bit of stomach upset. If you have a lot of stomach upset, it might not work. But if you have a coughing fit, or if you get acute hiccups, if you chew on some candied ginger. The ginger is anti-inflammatory, and it is also a counter-irritant, and it's not as intense to take as cayenne pepper, which will also provide that counter irritant issue as well. But if you get some nice spicy ginger candy or candied ginger, and you can tolerate, because not everybody likes ginger, and I've given candied ginger to patients and had them spit it out. But I love candied ginger, and you know, my staff also loves the candied ginger, and so I always keep it around. I keep it in my desk and I keep it at home. And I usually use it medicinally for upset tummy, for coughing, and for hiccups, because I find that it will subvert hiccups as well. And I'm wondering too, if because it's a counter irritant, if it would also work for leg cramps. I haven't tried it for that, because you do cayenne pepper and pickle juice for leg cramps, and the way they work is it's counter irritant. And I think that the spiciness of the ginger has that going on as well. So ginger. All the time in your food. I've taken to making these lattes. So I don't do great with dairy. So my lattes have dairy substitutes, almond milk, coconut milk in them, with a little bit of organic coffee. And then I pour in a bunch of ginger, a bunch of cinnamon, and a bunch of cardamom powder. And now I have a Turkish latte. So I'm having ginger and cinnamon every day, and sometimes cardamom as well. All great anti-inflammatories with great health benefits. So more herbs that help with cough. So the combinations that I take, that they will have herbs in it like ginger, grindelia. Grindelia is a lovely herb. It's not a local herb. It grows in the Southwest, and I've picked it growing in Colorado. There's a picture of me somewhere with a grindelia flower stuck to my face. And the reason it's stuck to my face is because it's also known as gumweed. It's very gummy. It has resin. Stuff that has resin sticks to the back of your throat, and resin is antimicrobial. It's a substance that the plant makes to heal itself. So grindelia is a resinous plant. And it is it's in the daisy family. It's an Asteraceae, but it doesn't grow here. It grows in the desert. You'll find it in the Southwest, you'll find it in Colorado and Arizona and New Mexico and Utah and probably California too. I'm not sure, but, it's a great plant and it's very benign, and, it can go into cough formulas. It's great for coughs. It's one of the herbs you put into an asthma formula as well. And a lot of cough combinations include grindelia. Grindelia is also, if you get the tincture, it can be applied topically for poison ivy. So it's probably because the resin soothes it counteracts the urushiols, the irritating oils that are in the poison plants, poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac. So depending where you live, you're going to have any or all of those. And we definitely have poison ivy here. I am not sure about sumac and oak. Oak, I usually get poison oak out west. And poison sumac, I am not sure if poison sumac is in Connecticut. But poison ivy definitely is. We've got too much of it on our property because pine trees. Poison ivy is one of those things that you'll see growing under pine trees. It loves acidic soil. So with acidic soil from pine trees, you get all your berries. You get your blackberries, but we have those in our yard as well. Blackberries, raspberries, blueberries, bilberries, dewberries. So you get lots of lovely berries, and but you unfortunately will also get poison ivy, and you have to tiptoe through the poison ivy to get to the raspberries, unfortunately. So poison ivy definitely is around here, and you can use grindelia for that, but it definitely goes into your cough formulas. Then there's yerba santa. That's another great herb that it's very benign. Most people don't react to it, and you can have it. It's the Latin name is Areodictyon, and that goes in a lot of cough formulas. Then there's elecampane. Elecampane is mucilaginous, and it's a great herb for coughs. And wild cherry, that goes in a lot of formulas as well. Great anti-inflammatory, has anthocyanins that calm you down. Licorice is a mucilaginous herb. It's wonderfully anti-inflammatory. You shouldn't use it if you have any tendency towards high blood pressure, because it can raise your blood pressure, unless you use the deglycerizinated form. And deglycerizinated licorice, we think of, you know, you can get that chewable and in powders, and we think of that as soothing your tummy, but it can be helpful for coughs too. So you can use deglycerizinated licorice for coughs. And if you have a formula that you want, and you want to stay away from the licorice, and you want some DGL in it, you can either take it separately, or you can put the powder into your formula and shake it up. There's more resinous plants like poplar bud. Poplar bud is another, the poplar tree has buds that are sticky, and that's a great herb. Once again, resinous. It has a resin that will stick to the back of your throat and fight infections for you. And then propolis. I think we talked about propolis last week. Propolis, again, is made by bees, and propolis is part of the process of making honey and making beeswax, and it's an antimicrobial to help to protect the hive. But you can extract it from when you keep bees, you can extract propolis and use it in tincture form, and you can use it in formulas to help with coughs. And then there are other mucilaginous expectorants, and the mucilaginous herbs tend to be very benign. They tend to not upset your stomach, and they tend to help stomach issues. The main thing that's good about them is they have plant goo, which is mucilage, and the mucilage has a similar formulation to N-acetylglucosamine, which is part of the lining of your digestive system and your respiratory system and your urinary tract. So there are lovely herbs like marshmallow root. Now, marshmallow root you can make into a tea. And marshmallow root, to get the mucilaginous elements, it's best done as a cold infusion. So you put some cut up or chopped marshmallow root into water, and then you let it sit in the fridge overnight, and then it'll get really gooey, and then you strain it to get out the actual herb, and then you can drink it, and it's very mild tasting. It's what they used to flavor marshmallow candy with. I don't think they do that anymore, but it is very gooey, and that goo is soothing to your respiratory tract. Slippery elm, similarly, it's gotten from the slippery elm tree, and slippery elm tastes very pleasant. It has like a mapley taste to it, and also very gooey and slippery. Okra, depending on where you come from, whether you've eaten it before, okra really has a lot of goo, as you know, if you've cooked with it. And when you and that goo, again, is very good for your digestive system. It's very good for your respiratory system. And hibiscus has some mucilaginous elements to it as well. Hibiscus you have to be careful of if you tend to be easily knocked out, like if you're sensitive to things that make you fall asleep. Hibiscus can be intense like that. And I have trouble taking hibiscus because it knocks me out too much. There's some melatonin in the hibiscus. But if that doesn't bother you, if it can relax you, and it is also really great for coughs, and it has wonderful antioxidants in it, and it helps to lower your blood pressure. So when you have coughs, you want to drink lots of water and herbal tea and green tea if you tolerate if you tolerate the caffeine. Green tea is wonderful for your immune system. So is white tea. And they're both wonderful antioxidants. And then don't forget honey. Honey itself, whether you do hot honey or normal honey, honey is great for coughs, and there are great studies on honey that show that it works better for coughs than cough medicine. So honey is something you can put in your tea. Enjoy the honey. Brush your teeth afterwards, or rinse your mouth out with plain water afterwards. But honey is really good for coughs. And then there are mucolytics, so mucolytic products. So one of them is NAC, N-acetylcysteine. So N-acetylcysteine is a wonderful antiviral, and it also helps to break up mucus, and it thins mucus, so it makes it easier to spit out. So if you do NAC and drink a lot of water, you're going to get more of the mucus is sticky, it'll help to get it out. And then guaifenesin. So guaifenesin is what's in Mucinex. And guaifenesin is natural. It comes from guaiacum bark. It's extract of guaiacum bark. And it's also a mucolytic. And you have to be careful with guaifenesin. You don't want to take more than 2,400 milligrams in a day, or it'll make you nauseous. But I find that for me, that if I take because I have a natural product that has guaifenesin and mullein and fenugreek in it, and the pills are only 200 milligrams. If you buy guaifenesin from the drugstore, you're going to get 600 milligram pills, and they warn you don't take any more than four of those in a day. The product that I have comes in 200 milligram pills, so you can take less. So I will usually take two at a time. And if I take two doses of 400 milligrams, that usually does it for me. That 800 milligrams for the day is enough. And I also have guaifenesin-only pills in the house. They're 600 milligrams each. And be careful when you buy guaifenesin, because guaifenesin can come with a cough suppressant in it. Dextromethorphan is an opioid. So if you don't want to have an opioid on board, you don't want to get the guaifenesin DM, which is dextromethorphan. And then you can get guaifenesin with a decongestant in it. And if you don't want to have a decongestant, the decongestants are sympathomimetics. So they make you, they'll dry you out, but they will also, they'll wire you out. And if you don't want to have that, be careful, don't get those. So I tend to recommend not getting those and just doing the guaifenesin and or NAC and drinking a lot of fluid. And that's going to help to thin your mucus and help you to bring it up. There's hydrotherapy treatments that you can do. So hot fomentations. Now, hot fomentations are hard to do to yourself. You have to usually get somebody to do them. But we were taught how to administer them when I was in naturopathic college. And when you do hot fomentation, you have your feet on a heating pack or in a hot foot bath. You have your back on a heating pack. And then you are set up on a wool blanket covered in a soft cotton sheet. And then you get hot towels applied to your chest, to your entire chest from neck to your pelvis. And you get a cold compress applied to your head. And then you get wrapped up in the blankets and you lie there for 3 minutes wrapped up like that. And then they open it up and they give you another set of the hot towels, another 3 minutes. And then they open you up and then they do a cold mitten friction on your chest. And if you heat up the cold cloth that's on your forehead, they rinse it out in cold water and reapply it. So you always want to have cold to your head or you'll get a headache. And so whenever you're applying a lot of heat to the body, you always put cold to your head. And so we used to have an ice bath for washcloths, and we'd have a couple washcloths going, and we'd change them out as they got heated up. And so you do two sets of hot towels, and then you do a whole cold mitten friction to the chest, another two sets of hot towels, another cold mitten friction to the chest, and then third set, all the while you're changing out the cold pack on the head, and you're offering the patient water to drink all through it. And, you know, if they get thirsty, you give them water right away. And after the third one, you open up the sheets and take them off, and then you do a cold mitten friction to the whole body. And so the cardinal rule of hydrotherapy is always end with cold. So that hot and cold like that, I've seen it turn around bronchitis and pneumonia. It's really quite amazing. So if you can get somebody to do a therapy like that, there are some clinics that still provide it. I don't have the facilities to provide hydrotherapy like that, but hot fomentation is really, really profound. It's just a hydrotherapy treatment using hot and cold water and compresses, and it's really profound for helping a person to get through a respiratory infection. So that's hot fomentations. You can take hot baths and use essential oils in the tub, eucalyptus, thyme, and peppermint. You can also use the essential oils in the shower. So get the shower going really hot and steamy, and then you can have a water bottle that has essential oils in it, like eucalyptus, and you can spray it in the shower so that you're breathing in the essential oils while you're in the shower, and they can help to open you up as well. You can do aromatic chest rubs, and I don't recommend getting the popular brand unless that's all you can find. If that's all you can find, then by all means get it. But the popular brand has mineral oil, it has petroleum jelly in it. And you can get natural brands that don't have petroleum jelly. And they will have, once again, herbs in it that have peppermint, menthol, eucalyptus. And you inhale those oils, you put them on the chest, and they tend to open up the chest. They tend to reduce inflammation locally. And you inhale the essential oils, and they make you feel better. And you can do steam inhalations, where you put a pot of hot water on the stove and you boil it. Then you turn off the heat. Never put your face over a live burner. Okay, if the pot is on a live burner, you do not put your face over that. You always turn the burner off first. And then, so you turn the burner off, then you can put your essential oils in, your eucalyptus and or peppermint and or thyme, and then you can take a towel and bend over the put it over your head and bend over the pot and inhale the vapors, and that'll help to break you up too. Then I like cell salts. So cell salts are related to homeopathy, and there's only 12 of them. And I don't know if I wonder if I could recite them all. There's an order of cell salts because they're numbered from 1 to 12. And I don't think I can recite them all off the top of my head, but I'll tell you the ones that you like to use for respiratory infections. And I like to use them either for sinus infections or respiratory infections where there's a lot of mucus that's not resolving. So you want to know about the quality of the mucus. So if the mucus is like egg white or white, you use Natrum Muriaticum cell salts, and they're not super high potency. When things are in X potencies, that means that they're diluted by a factor of 10. When they're C potencies, they're diluted by factors of hundreds, and M potencies are diluted by factors of thousands. So cell salts come in X potencies. They're 3X, 6X, 12X, and that's it. So I will use Natrum Muriaticum, which is salt. That's sodium chloride. And that one, you use that if the mucus is clear or white or egg whitey. And that's when you use that, you use Natrum Muriaticum. If the mucus is grayish, it's thick and kind of grayish, you use Cali Muriaticum. If the mucus is mostly white but tinged with yellow, then you use calcium sulfuric. And if the mucus is, there's a lot of green in it, if it's green and yellow, then you use calisulf, the potassium sulfate. And if the person tends to be if the person's very irritable and has white thick mucus, you might use calc phosphorica. And silica you would use if the mucus is really stuck and it really you really can't get it out and you want to initiate the mucus to come out, then you would use silica. And so there's a number of other cell salts, but those are my favorites for mucus. And so if you're not sure which cell salt to use, that's when you have to ask a practitioner to show you which one to use. I wouldn't always just look at the bottle, because I've had patients bring in homeopathics. Well, it said to use it for this. And, you know, they're not necessarily, you really have to fit what's going on with the patient to the remedy that you're using. And just because it says so on the bottle, they put the very basic things that it's good for, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So it's a good idea to ask somebody who knows what they're doing with cell salts and homeopathy. So then there's, we talked about RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. So my feeling about vaccinations is that it's everybody's choice, that if you have had a bad reaction to a vaccination, you may want to reconsider whether you get a vaccination. I personally am very afraid to get vaccinations because I've reacted to them. But you may do fine with vaccinations. And if you feel like you're going to be exposed a lot to RSV, you're exposed to little kids a lot, you're in the public a lot, you're immune compromised, and you do okay with vaccinations, you might want to get a vaccination. I feel the same way about the flu shot. The studies do show that if you take a flu shot, that you're less likely to get the flu, and if you do get the flu, it won't be as severe because you have some antibodies to it. The problem with the flu shot is that they don't always nail the strain correctly, because they're basing it on what happened on the other side of the world for their winter. So they look at what happened in Australia, for example. They have their winter when we have our summer. Their flu season is 6 months opposite ours. So they look at what's going on there, and then they try to decide what strains to put in the flu shot for our winter. And they don't always nail it. Sometimes the flu shot is only 20% effective. But you might get a little bit of help from it. I don't take vaccinations for that because I am able to use, you know, I clean my nose, I gargle, and I take a lot of immune support over the course of the year. So, and I just don't do well with vaccinations. But that's a decision I've made because of my personal circumstances. You can make a different decision. It's okay. And I have patients who come in and they ask me, should I get a vaccination? And I tell them, you know, again, we have this conversation. I don't say absolutely not. I never say absolutely not. Do I get a COVID vaccine? Well, if you did okay with the COVID vaccine, then you might want to get another one. I did not. And if you have any vasovagal issues, if you have a lot of immune stuff that centers around vagus nerve stuff, I don't recommend it because we know that the COVID vaccine and COVID itself goes after the vagus nerve. But in every case is different. So I never recommend anything off the cuff. You know, I don't say don't ever get this, because it depends on the person. It depends on what their needs are and what their immune system is like and what their body is like. So you might want to know the difference between bronchitis and pneumonia. So bronchitis is a more of an acute infection, and it's limited mostly to the bronchi. So your respiratory system involves your nose, your throat, and then you have your trachea, which is the tube that goes down your throat. And then it branches off into two branches called bronchi. And bronchi is the Greek name for branches. So it branches into two bronchi, and the bronchi branch out even more into bronchioles. And then they go into alveoli. And they are, and the alveoli is where the gas exchange happens in your lungs. And they're surrounded by lung tissue, the interstitium, the parenchyma. Parenchyma is the word for the actual tissue that holds everything together. So parenchyma, you have parenchyma of the heart, you have parenchyma of all your organs have parenchyma. Parenchyma is the tissue that holds the active elements together. So you have parenchyma of the kidneys, and then you have your kidney tubules and your blood vessels. You have parenchyma of the lungs, and then you have all your tubes, your trachea, your bronchi, your bronchioles, your alveoli. You have the parenchyma of the heart, which is your heart, that's the myocardium. And so the myocardium is the muscle of the heart, and then you have all the blood vessels that go through there and the valves and stuff that are not, well, the valves are made of myocardium, but the actual opening is not the parenchyma. The parenchyma is the actual tissue. So, and then you have liver parenchyma. The liver parenchyma is what, it's this, the meat that holds all the biliary tract together, and the active elements in the liver are the biliary, is the whole biliary system and the blood vessels and lymphatics. By the way, there's lymphatics in the kidneys and in the kidneys as well. So there's lymphatics that go through some of those organs as well. Anyway, so in the lungs, Bronchitis is an inflammation of the bronchi mostly, and you can get bronchiolitis where it gets even deeper into the lungs. That's not quite pneumonia. And pneumonia is when you get inflammation of the whole works. You have inflammation in the alveoli as well. And when you have asthma, you can have inflammation in the alveoli as well. You make thick, sticky mucus that's hard to get out. And you can have inflammation. Well, when you have inflammation of the lung parenchyma, that's called pneumonitis. And you'll get pneumonitis if you have, usually if you've inhaled something that's toxic. So asbestosis is a type of pneumonitis. Black lung from breathing coal dust is a pneumonitis. That's when the parenchyma gets inflamed. But when it's the tubes that go into your lungs, the bronchi and the bronchioles and the alveoli, and it's all the way down in there and it's very hard to breathe, that's pneumonia. When it's limited to the bronchi pretty much, then that's bronchitis. And bronchitis you can usually get out of by conservative means, by taking medicine, doing all the things that we discussed, by drinking lots of water, hydrotherapy, herbs, that kind of thing. And bronchitis is not nearly as serious as pneumonia. And if you can't breathe, please go to the ER. Then the ER, they can take care of you. They can give you oxygen. You might have to have steroids. You'll get antimicrobials if you need them. So if you go to urgent care with a bad cough, what they're probably going to, so it depends how bad it is. If it's bad enough, like I said, when I've gone to the urgent care, if I am having really a lot of trouble breathing to the point where every time I breathe, I cough, they put me on a nebulizer in the urgent care. And I'm not a big fan of doing that, but my goodness, as soon as they put it on, you feel better. So there's no steroid in it. It's just a bronchodilator. And as I said, the anti-muscarinic. You feel better right away. And then usually they send you home with an antibiotic. So depending on what they're giving you, it could be, if you're not allergic to a penicillin, they might give you amoxicillin. They might give you a cephalosporin, or they might give you azithromycin. And I do well with azithromycin, so I've had Z-Packs. Usually that's what they send me with. And the Z-Pack you take for 5 days and that's it. And when I get a Z-Pack, I always take Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a probiotic that cannot be killed by the azithromycin to keep my gut so I don't get yeast infections and don't get stomach discomfort, GI discomfort from the killing off of my good bacteria. And unfortunately, when you take antibiotics, that is certainly something that can happen. So you'll be given an antibiotic. You might be given a prescription for a bronchodilator, which I will take. And I use it judiciously. If I can breathe, I don't take the bronchodilator. I'll take it. If it says take it 4 times a day, I don't necessarily do that. If I get to a point where I can't breathe, or I'm having trouble breathing because I'm coughing too much, I'll take the bronchodilator. You have to be careful with the bronchodilators. It's usually albuterol, and it will rev you up, and it could give you palpitations and make it so it's harder to rest, because it's a sympathomimetic. So the sympathomimetics dry you out, open up your lungs. They make it so you're in fight or flight, so you can run away from the bear. And that's one of the things there is you want your lungs to be opened up so you can breathe better. So if you take too much bronchodilator, you can wind up having jitters, palpitations, make it hard to sleep. So I tend to use those judiciously. It is up to you if you want to use it exactly the way that it's prescribed, which is sometimes 4 times a day. And you might also be given a steroid. And sometimes I'll take the steroid and sometimes I won't. I had a couple of times where I did take the steroid ongoing and I did okay with it. I had one time, the last time I was given a steroid was probably that time in 2020. I remember I was on the steroid and I remember walking through Kohl's. I was in Kohl's for some reason. And I noticed that I felt very flushed and very hyper. And I felt like maybe my blood pressure was really high. So that was it. I stopped the steroid. They give you like 40 milligrams for 4 days. I was not given a step down. I had a step down of methylprednisolone for my acute nerve pain in last April. And I was able to tolerate that, but that's a much lower dose. They give you a high dose for a few days. And that's often what they give you. And that cocktail of antibiotic, bronchodilator, And steroid usually knocks out the bronchitis. The problem is that when you take steroids, steroids are an immunosuppressive, and it makes it more likely that you'll that the infection can hang on for a little bit longer and that you might get more infections. So that's why I made the decision to take a little bit of lung herb every day. So when I say that, I'm taking, there's a couple of different products that I can get that are full of lung herbs. There's a cough medicine that you can get, a cough syrup that you can get at the Asian grocery store that comes from China. I don't take those all the time. I take them if I have an acute bronchitis, but I get one from my suppliers that has a lot of the herbs that I mentioned, the wild cherry and the slippery elm and the elecampane and yerba santa. So I take about a quarter teaspoon of that every day all year. And then if I get a cough, I take more. And use the instructions of the teaspoon several times a day. So there's a couple of products that I can get that have all those in it. And I take them, if you have a tendency towards bronchitis, it's something to think about and discuss with your natural practitioner. Should I take a little bit of lung herb every day? And I have to admit that protocol of doing a small amount of lung herbs all the time was recommended to me by my staff, by Amy, because that was something that she did with herbs. She was having issues. I think she was having the same issue. She was getting a lot of bronchitis, so she decided she was going to take a little bit of lung herb all day for a year or two. I feel like I still have immune issues, so I'm going to keep doing that. You know, it's this time of year, there's so much going around that you want to, that I want to keep my immune system going. And I take other immune things all the time, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, quercetin. Those are on board all the time because of the various issues that I have had. And so that's what to do. So the big thing about the reason to go to the urgent care or to the ER is if you can't breathe, if you're having trouble breathing, if you're coughing, but you're still walking around, you can go to the urgent care. Urgent care will make a decision whether to send you to the ER. If you are really having trouble breathing, then you can go right to the ER. And the ER will take care of you. They'll give you oxygen. They'll set you up and they can keep better surveillance on you and take care of you if need be. So the other thing is that GI viruses are going around. There's been an increase in the norovirus. And the norovirus, remember when during COVID we talked about how there were foments and there were aerosols, and COVID is mostly spread by aerosols. So when somebody breathes, they breathe a mist into the air, and that is how you contract COVID. That's the main way of contracting COVID. It's not so much about foments. So all that business about cleaning off surfaces wasn't nearly as helpful for COVID. We didn't know at first, so we were cleaning everything. We were cleaning off groceries that had been delivered. I still wipe down all the surfaces after my in between patients because it's something I can do. And you don't know what they have. They could have a GI infection. There are RSV is spread by foments as well as aerosols. So RSV, you want to wipe down surfaces. But COVID, not so much. GI viruses are spread mostly by foments. They're called fecal oral because you touch the surface, you touch your face, and you get the illness. So wiping down surfaces is a good idea. That's why it's a really good idea when you go to the bathroom, especially if you're going in a public bathroom, wash your hands every single time, even if you don't think your hands are dirty, because you could have touched something that somebody else touched, and you're not going to see it. You don't have to see poop on the toilet seat for there to be coliforms, you know, bacteria that are in somebody's gut or viruses to be on the toilet seat. So it's a good idea to wash your hands every single time you use a public bathroom or use a multi-use bathroom. So at your bathroom at the office as well. And at the office you want to keep your hands clean and you want to keep washing off surfaces. GI viruses are definitely spread by foments. Grapeseed extract and kefir are both studied to help prevent and treat the norovirus. You might have to take a lot of it. If you find yourself with the norovirus and you can keep stuff down, if you take a bunch of grapeseed extract and if you can ingest kefir, it can be helpful. And if you consume kefir all the time or take a good quality multiprobiotic, you might be less likely to get it. And I take a good probiotic all the time, and I also I eat yogurt regularly. I have a good quality yogurt that has a lot of strains in it. I don't do kefir as much because I'm non-dairy. The yogurt I have is non-dairy, but you can get non-dairy kefir as well, and you can also get aqua kefir that's not made from, you know, plant milks. And I do have a non-dairy plant milk kefir that I haven't tried. And ginger is also great for GI inflammation and GI lifestyle stuff, you know, getting good rest, eating healthily, not eating too much sugar. Those are all going to help your immune system. When we used to give Robert's formula, and we will sometimes do that too. And Robert's formula is basically, it's echinacea, golden seal, slippery elm, and sometimes it has crane's bill in it, which is wild geranium, and aloe, a couple other mucilaginous herbs in it. But we have combinations of that, and Robert's formula was developed by an older herbalist called Roberts, and so we have combinations of those. It's basically mucilaginous herbs plus echinacea golden seal, which will kill a lot of stuff. And so if somebody can hold it down, we give those capsules. If you are in a place where you can't hold stuff down, then it's a good idea to drink as much fluid as you can get in, get into the electrolytes. And if you really can't keep anything down and you can't stop vomiting or having diarrhea, again, it is time to go to the ER because you can get dangerously dehydrated. And if you have an electrolyte imbalance, that's a medical emergency. So if you are nonstop vomiting and diarrhea, and it's not getting better, it's time to go to the ER, and they'll put you on an IV, because if you can't hold anything down, they're going to put you on an IV and they're going to give you anti-nausea medication. Ginger can be great for that, but if you can't get it down, then they will put usually ondansetron into the IV, and off you go. You're going to feel a lot less nauseous. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. A little bit of an update on what's going on with me. I'll have more to report the next time, because the next time I make a show, I believe I will have already had my MRI and gotten the news about what to do about it. And I will have had my second iridotomy, and I will have had my bridge. I might have even had my bridge placed, but I'll have the bridge prep anyway. So there'll be more to report. And I'll be with Ron, and that'll be nice. So hopefully to you, keep yourself well and healthy and enjoy the rest of your winter. The next time I make a show, it will be meteorological spring, because it's going to be in March. And anyway, so enjoy. I hope you had a nice Valentine's Day. You got to eat some chocolate and spend time with your loved ones, even if your loved one is just you and or your pet and or your stuffy, your stuffed animal. So I'm going to let you go. So, you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or a licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.